Welcome back to Start Kyle Orton, the place where we do nothing that has to do with Kyle Orton. I am here, as always, with Kyle. Kyle, today might be my favorite episode of the draft pre-process. It's not quarterbacks, which we've been talking about for like 5 weeks, but man, anytime I can watch big, meaty men slapping man meat for a whole week, I do it.
It's so funny because I was a lineman. Like, that's why I have a destroyed left knee that stops functioning when the temperature dips below 40 degrees every year.
Hell yeah.
And I am just like an in-depth quarterback guy, obviously. All of my favorite research, everything is into the quarterback position. And you were, well, basically a wide receiver on a team that never threw the ball.
That is correct. We'll say safety because that's really what I did.
but your interest is always in the big boys up front. You get all the way into the O-line and the DL reviews. I love that. We balanced each other out so well on that front. Also, we should talk about Kyle Orton sometime. We should do a Kyle Orton related episode sometime.
One day he will randomly become aware of us and we'll just bring him on and we'll talk all about Kyle.
It's been 15 years. You'd think if he's ever Googled his name, we've come up. Like, he's presumably aware that we exist. It's been 15 years since we started the blog, the Twitter account. Not that long, lighter than that. So
yeah, maybe we'll just have to reach out to him. I'll bump into him one day on the street. It'll be like the red string of fate.
I mean, he lives in Iowa, theoretically.
He does. Yes. I'll see him at Jordan Creek one day.
For those who do not know, so Start Kyle Orton, where this actually started, way back when Travis and I were young bucks, freshmen in college even, we wanted Lovie Smith to start Kyle Orton over Brian Greasy. We started a blog with the name Start Kyle Orton. And then Kyle was the starting quarterback for the Bears for the next year after we started that blog. Oh no, I just lost Travis. I have lost Travis. Hopefully he comes back in.
No, I came back. You could have kept going.
All right. Wow, that was okay. He just disappeared on me for a second.
Sometimes I'm here, sometimes I'm there.
Yeah, and then, of course, within a year of us like starting the blog, basically the Jay Cutler trade happened, so starting Kyle Orton was no longer applicable. But we just decided that it was funnier to commit to the bit. When Kyle Orton was still an active NFL player, that was the funniest, because when he was in Denver, I got screamed at by people who wanted to start Tim Tebow. When he was in Buffalo, I got people who wanted him, who were super fond of me because they wanted him to start over EJ Manuel. The funniest was absolutely the Dallas Cowboy fans who just hated Tony Romo. We're all on board with me. So yeah. And then now Kyle's been retired now for, oh my God, 10 years. Holy shit.
We're ancient
with age. It just gets funnier with age. But that's the origin of the name. It's been a long time since we've had any Kyle Orton related content on Start Kyle Orton. We do still refer to him as the patron saint. But yeah, that's where that is. So anyways, now let's dive in to these offensive linemen.
I don't even think we've made it clear. We're talking about offensive linemen today.
Did we? Okay. Here, what if I turn off my camera, will that help you too, buddy? I know you're having...
Yeah, maybe we'll just both be in the darkness this time.
Yeah, Travis is having some technical issues on his...
My camera does not want to be on today, so I won't be able to look into Kyle's beautiful eyes deeply as I
just got a haircut, too. I look dope. Anyways,
he got his haircut just for me, guys, and we can't even see it.
Anyway, so offensive linemen. So there's been a lot of smoke recently about the Bears targeting offensive tackle at 9.
Yep.
Do you think they're actually targeting an offensive tackle at 9? Because I think it's a possibility. I don't want to say it's not a possibility. I think it's a fallback plan. I don't think they're targeting them. And then I think the targeting is intentional leakage, because there's a lot of teams in that 10 to 14 range who need an offensive tackle. And I think what Ryan Poles is trying to do is say, hey, if you want an offensive tackle, you've got to jump ahead of the Chicago Bears and ensure that a wide receiver falls. You need to jump ahead of us if you want a tackle, because that's what we're totally going to do. Or he's also advertising like, hey, if you want a tackle and these wide receivers are gone, Chicago is the guy to trade up with.
Yeah, I don't I think what we've seen from polls at this point is just that he's a very honest guy and a very straightforward guy. He's not a big smokescreen guy. And I think you could see in the guys that the Bears brought in this week, 9 is just a very fluid spot. And you could tell from all of the different mock drafts that like pretty much anything could happen for the Bears. We could have one of those wide receivers. We could have two of them. We could have none of them. Dallas Turner could be off the board. Dallas Turner could be on the board. Joe Alt could slip past Tennessee somehow, and he could be there, or he could not be there. The Bears could trade down. The Bears could trade up. And I really think Poles just has a ton of different options and a ton of different plans at this point. And one of those things you have to prepare for is the scenario where the three wide receivers and Dallas Turner are gone.
Yeah.
And where you say, there's no good option to trade down.
Yeah.
So why not grab one of these tackles?
Right. Well, and the thing to remember is positional value matters. And Joe Alt, and we'll talk about Joe Alt here in a second, but, you know, a true blue pass protecting left tackle is a top on a rookie contract is one of the three most valuable types of players you can have in the NFL. It really is. And while I would be mad if they did that with one of those three wide receivers still on the board, if that guy falls to you at 9, I think you take him and you figure it out, you know? Like, you don't... I think you and I, honestly, a couple weeks ago were mad at people saying that they needed a tackle to replace Braxton Jones. Neither of us thinks they need to replace Braxton Jones. But at the same time, it is kind of short-term thinking if a true blue elite pass-protecting tackle falls to you and you say, well, but we have Braxton Jones, and you take a lesser caliber player. So there's some scenarios where a tackle makes sense at 9. It's some scenarios where maybe a slightly different offensive lineman makes sense in a trade down. So let's go through this list. And I'm just going to warn you guys in advance. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to hedge because I have two boards, Travis, for these offensive linemen.
Yes.
Because I have these offensive linemen ranked one way just for pure value in a vacuum as to who I think is the best overall prospects in what order. And I have a completely different board for how I would take them if I was the Chicago Bears. Because one of these guys is a top two tackle for me, and I don't think he should be on the Bears board at all. So let's get into it. Travis, give me your top offensive lineman in the 2024 NFL draft and tell me why.
Tell me why. Yeah.
Ain't nothing but a Joe Alt. Tell me why. I kind of teased you last week, Kyle. I said there's one guy who I would take over Roma Dunza if he's on the board. And this other guy is also available. And much probably to your shock, given how passionately I've defended Braxton Jones, I can reveal to you now that man is Joe Alt.
Over Roma Dunza?
Over Rome Odunza, I would be okay. Now, it might not necessarily be my pick. I'd have him in a similar spot. I know. But here's the deal. Joe Alt might be the best left tackle prospect to have come out probably in the last 10 years. I think he is a guarantee. You do not see guarantees at left tackle in the NFL. This dude, from his technique to his knowledge of plays, his play knowledge is insane. He is exactly where he needs to be on every play. He can read defenses and what they're trying to do to him to a level that most tackles don't. We're going to talk about some dudes here who have some talent and who play dumber than a box of rocks here in a little bit. And Joe Alt is not that guy. Joe Alt knows exactly where every play is going and what the defense is doing and what he needs to do. Beyond that, technique-wise, you rarely, if ever, see a guy coming out of college with the technique that Joe Alt has got. Joe Alt plays with his arms extended and keeps guys at length. When they try to get inside, when a guy is strong enough to get inside on Joe Alt, he has the ability, which is truly rare, to get a guy back outside of his body. Usually, if you allow a defensive lineman to get inside you as a tackle, you're pretty much done. He's inside at that point. So now you're struggling inside with that guy. And we're going to talk about Olu Fashanu in a bit. Olu invites them inside. Alt keeps them at arm's length. And if they push his arms in, he just gets them right back out. It's terrifying. It's not something a tackle can usually do. And you certainly don't see it done with the frequency and the regularity that Joe Alt can do it. He's the prototype. It is all I can think. I can't ask of anything else from him. He's ultra athletic. His RAS score was insane. He pulls well. He's a dog in the run game, but it's really his pass blocking where he shines. There's nothing I could say to be like, ah, this is Joel's weakness. The only times he's ever beat is by like a really aggressive speed rush that then turns into a different technique. And we're going to talk about a dude who I think would have been the best defensive end in this draft, who tested a bunch of the tackles we've got here in JT Tuimalo. That's the only dude who gave him trouble, because JT is so good at speed rushing to the outside and then spinning to the inside and then ducking, combining all of his techniques together. If you guys have not seen the Ohio State Notre Dame game from this last year, please go back and only watch Joe Alt versus JT Tuimalo. Fucking clash of the Titans. Like, I'm getting like hyped right now. I'm getting sweaty here because this was such a fun game to watch. Just Joe Alt in a nutshell, there's nothing this guy does wrong. And I love Braxton Jones, but Joe Alt has a very, very good shot at being not just one of the best left tackles in the NFL, but the best left tackle in the NFL for years to come. And I think that's just, if Poles wants to take that guy, I'm okay with it. I think he's on that same level as I want with Rome Odunze, but Rome is more of a need in this case, and Joe Alt is best player available if he falls to 9. To be clear, I don't expect him to be there. I don't think there's any way he makes it past Tennessee, but if he's there, I'm absolutely pulling the trigger, man. What do you think?
Whew, no. No and no.
You're taking the wide receiver, eh?
I mean, I'm taking Rome Odunze. Yes. To me, that is, I can see your argument for BPA there, but for me, those two guys are basically the same. I mean, you're talking two blue players either way. So either one, in my opinion, is the BPA there. And then I think it is okay to consider Need a little more. So I'm taking Rome Odunze over Joe Alt. But that said, I'm not going to take anything away from your Joe Alt spiel. I do think he is basically a perfect tackle prospect. He has size. He has absurd athleticism. The pass protection is legit in every way. He gave up one sack in almost 800 pass blocking snaps the last 2 years. One thing we talked about a lot last year when we were talking about Darnell Wright and why we liked him, PFF tracks true pass block grade, because nowadays a lot of offensive linemen are being hidden by quick game, by screens, by play action, by moving pockets. But how many times was a guy, you know, just asked to like straight up, it's a straight up drop back pass. The defense knows it. If you versus your guy, you got to block for 2 to 4 seconds, just drop back, keep him in front of you, etc. And Joe Alt was just simply dominant in these situations. Overall, he had an 85.4 true pass block grade, which is just fantastic. It's absurd. And that matches the tape. I mean, you said it all, really. Joe Alt is, to me, yes, he is as good of a tackle prospect as I can remember. In recent memory, if he's there at 9, again, if he falls to 9 and the wide receivers are gone, I do take him, and I figure it out later. I think then you probably could probably flip Braxton Jones, because Braxton Jones still got 2 years left on a cheap fifth-year rookie contract. I think a team like the Chiefs, for example, that really needs a tackle and is otherwise kind of cap-strapped right now, a Braxton Jones might be worth a late second round pick to them. They might really do that kind of calculation.
Sure.
that would be and you know, Poles has that relationship there with the Kansas City front office. That would make a lot of sense to me if you took an Ault, if Ault falls, just take Ault and then flip Braxton to Kansas City for a late second round pick and go from there. I think, but man, if Roman Dunn's is still there, I still got it. We can talk about that. We're going to, in a couple of weeks, right before the week before the draft, we're going to do a lot of scenarios. We're going to do some sims. I'm going to put Travis in the Ryan Poles seat and ask him what he would do in a number of scenarios. But yeah, no, Joe Ault, tackle one, truly worth the hype, in my opinion. Would have taken him over any of the tackle prospects in last year's draft. And I really liked those three guys at the top last year. I mean, I like Skoronski too, but I didn't think he was a tackle. You didn't think he was a tackle. It turned out he wasn't a tackle. That was one of the dumbest debates. People like to forget that one. But man, Chicago media really pushed Skoronski hard because he was a local kid, went to Northwestern. We tried to tell them the whole time, like, I guarantee you Ryan Poles does not see him as an offensive tackle.
Right.
They were like, how can you say he's not an offensive tackle? He's played left tackle his whole college career, blah, blah, blah. And so did Cody Whitehair. It doesn't mean
we got some dudes in this draft who are very similar.
Yes, we're going to get into that here in just a second. But yeah, no, he is – Ault is incredible. If he falls to 9, I take him and I figure it out. I wouldn't take him over a Dunza. But yeah, Ault is
– yeah, and I think – I mean, any scenario in which Ault is there at 9, I feel like that guarantees all three wide receivers are gone, right? Like, yeah, there's almost absolutely.
There's no way that
– both of those guys at 9, I highly doubt it.
Yeah.
So yeah, Joe Ault's number one for both of us. Number two is a bit variable for you, yeah?
Okay, so number two for me is on the true board, so this is regardless of team – I really like Latham out of Alabama. I think he has absurd size. I think he's got absurd athleticism. He is a dominant run blocker. He looked pretty good in true pass set as well. The only issue I have with him, and the reason he's not number two on my Bears big board, is because I think he's a pure right tackle, just like Darnell Wright, and I would not want to force either of them to move positions. I hate when people do that. I hate when people treat left tackle as though it's more important than right tackle. I know it contract-wise it still is, but to me, it's they both matter, and if a guy's a dominant right tackle, you just leave a guy as a dominant right tackle. Darnell Wright wasn't at his best when he was a left tackle in college. He was a dominant right tackle. He stepped right in and was a plug and play, great right tackle. I think J.C. Latham, is it Latham or is it Latham? Do you know? I think it's Latham.
Latham, yeah. Yep, Latham, you got it.
Yeah, I think he is stepped in day one, dominant, and not dominant necessarily. Darnell wasn't, I would say, dominant. He showed flashes of dominating, but he was a solid average starting right tackle with signs of future dominance to come day one. And I think the same thing of Latham, but he's a right tackle for me. So he's not even, I wouldn't really consider him if I was the Bears because I don't want to move either.
Yeah. Yeah. We are completely agreed on this one. Basically the correlation between Darnell Wright and J.C. Latham is kind of terrifying. Both of them played a different position initially, multiple years ago. Then they got 2 years at right tackle. In 2 years at right tackle, Latham had over 800 pass snaps. He only gave up 2 sacks. I watched both of them. They were both situations where two guys were coming at him, and he had no help. So one got passed, sacked the quarterback. It's really just not his fault. They also play very similarly, these guys. They both have that kind of confidence. They want to let the defensive player initiate. And then once they get in there, you're kind of in their world, and it's almost impossible to get unstuck for them. You go into a black hole, and that's it. Sorry, like the snap is over for you as a defender. And that's just exactly how it worked. Like I said, the only way to beat him in 2 years at right tackle at Alabama was simply to send two guys at him, and he's got to pick one. Like, that's it. But yeah, just a huge guy. And unlike another huge guy we're going to talk about later, a huge guy with really strong technique, a really refined understanding of the game, just like Darnell Wright had. If we didn't have Darnell, I know Poles would like him because you can tell by the way he plays that he's got that recall. He's got that I'm reading the defense type of thing. He knows his assignment. And if something seems amiss, he's very quick to adjust to it. Just, again, like Darnell, like a very good plug-and-play right tackle day one. Anybody who gets J.C. Latham is going to be extremely happy. They're going to feel like they got a steal at like 13 or 14.
Yeah. He is the Darnell Wright of this draft for sure. This is the dude that I'm like, yep, don't try to make him anything he's not. Don't try to fuck around with him and make him a left tackle. Don't move him to guard. You know, just stick him at right tackle. Let him cook. I think this is where you and I might have some disagreement. I'm not sure. On my Bears board, the number two tackle prospect for me, offensive line prospect for me, is Olu Fashanu still for Penn State. I know you don't love that he doesn't really like to get in on guys with his hands. I know that's what you're going to say. I think that's why he's frankly not as dominant of a run blocker as you'd like to see. But for me, if you're the Bears and if you are going to try to upgrade on Braxton Jones, I want an elite pass protector there then, because that is what's more important. And hopefully with Caleb Williams, you're going to be with mystery quarterback. Yeah.
The Bears this week have literally been talking about how during his visit, they get the chance to install the offense with him. Yeah. And they've literally like, well, technically we could sign him. We could sign him now.
mystery. No, anyways, I think with Caleb Williams, hopefully the Bears are going to be kind of more of a pass first team going forward than a team built around run blocking. And so to me, there are two guys that I think are elite pass protecting tackles, left tackles right now, as is in this draft. And that is Joe Alt. And for me, that is Fashanu. So if you are replacing Braxton Jones with either one of those guys for 2024, and I think it's worth noting that given the history of offensive tackles, either one of those guys, even as good as they are pass protectors, still could be worse year one than Braxton Jones. But if your hope is to have an elite pass, and I will agree, Braxton Jones is good. I think he's about maxed out, and I don't think he's ever going to be an elite pass blocking tackle. I think he's a guy kind of like the guy that he ultimately, in over a long enough time frame, replaced. He's kind of like Charles Leno, where he is a competent pass pro guy. He is more a guy, Robert Schmitz always likes to say, he's a guy who loses with grace. Like he might not be able to stop your powerful bull rusher, but he will slow it. He won't lose quickly. He'll give you enough time to adjust, but he's not going to bully guys. He's not going to be, Darnell Wright to me is a guy who could be a dominant right tackle, pancaking dudes. I don't see that in Braxton Jones in terms of pass pro. So I think if you were trying to upgrade to have a potentially elite pass blocker on a rookie contract at left tackle and right tackle to go along with Darnell, I think the guys there are Alt and they are Fashanu. Fashanu is so smooth. I know you don't like the hands, but to me, he is honestly maybe even better than Alt in terms of how well he just his feet and how well he mirrors edge rushers. His first step is incredible. He always knows before they do where they're going. They never get around him. He's always in front of them. I mean, he did not give up a single sack, not one in his college career, not a single sack. His true pass block grade just below Alt, 82 overall. I think he is so fluid. And I do think the hands thing is coachable. I really do. Like if that's your big concern about a guy, because he's got the length, he's got the athleticism. If you want to coach a guy to do a little snatch and grab, a little bit of that, I think that's something you can work on. But I just don't think you can teach the footwork and the mirroring ability that he has. He is a true blue pass pro left tackle to me. So that's why he's number two on my board there.
So yes, you've foreshadowed it. I have a lot to say about Olu Fashanu. The first thing I want to say about him is he's a very cool dude. For some reason, I watched a lot of his interviews here while I was watching him do pass pro. And he's a very good guy. Obviously a very good teammate. He obviously understands offense and defense. I think Mentally, he's very similar to Joe Alt. He has that same understanding of what the defense wants to do to him and where to go and where he needs to help. And if things change, he's very adjustable. Kyle, do you remember the Legion of Boom? Oh, are you still there?
This is a trick question, but yes.
Yeah, do you? Okay. Now, Kyle, if you had to tell me why the Legion of Boom was so successful the first year or two that they were out there, what's the number one thing you would say?
Giant corners who pressed against people?
Pressed is one. Yep. With it? There you go. They made a bet. Their bet was that referees were not going to throw a flag on them on every play, essentially. Their bet was, if I make what I'm doing, which is very close to pass interference, but if I do this shit every play, if I play physically every single play, I don't think the refs are going to call it on me every play. In fact, I think they're just not going to call it at all. And basically their style came down to a very physical style. But quite frankly, they were interfering a lot. The NFL ended up changing some rules around, and then you saw these guys disperse. You saw them kind of fall off in different locations. My biggest concern with Olufashanu is that he is presenting his holding on every single pass snap. What I mean by this, when you say he has bad arms, what he does is in basically the opposite of Darnell Wright. Darnell keeps guys at a distance and forces them to engage, and then he reacts to them and kind of locks them down. Olu brings the thunder. He wants to engage first, and he has his fucking hands outside of their pads on every single pass snap. This is not what you want as an offensive lineman in the NFL because it presents as holding. And when you have to go up against really great defensive ends, when you have to go up against like an all-star college team, essentially, every time you're out there on the field, they're going to try to get away from you, and your only recourse is to hold. Olu puts his hands into dude's shoulder pads, maybe more than I have ever seen another tackle in the NCAA. I did not get his penalty statistics. I didn't see dudes throwing flags on him. This is a play that is going to get flagged in the NFL, and I'm a little concerned about that. However, it has worked out for him very well, because what he's essentially doing is just locking onto dudes instantly, and he just keeps them there. There's nothing you can do with Olufashanu if he gets you sucked into him. You mentioned his arm length is just as long as Joe Alt, but to watch him play, he might as well have T-Rex arms, man. It's just that they're little like claws. Guys get in on him, he grabs them outside the pads, and he gets away with it. I'm concerned about the possibility of penalties in the NFL. However, like you said, this feels like a coachable thing. This dude has arms. He has the strength. I know he does, to keep guys at bay, to get them outside of the pocket and make sure they don't hit his quarterback. But you are making a bet. You're making a bet that you can coach that, because if the holding penalties start coming in and he gets flustered and you're trying to coach him to not do that and it doesn't work, that's a real risk. That's why I have him beyond J.C. Latham, because even though he has a shot at being like a real dominant pass protecting left tackle,
so I believe
I think that's a real concern.
If I'm reading this right, he was flagged 5 times in 1,349 career snaps.
So not much. Yeah. So that's my primary concern. Now, the other thing I've got, I think that one's kind of a lesser concern. This is more of a quirk I've noticed, right? Like, it's his technique for blocking. He's not getting penalized for it. And the bet could work. That, you know, NFL referees don't want to call holding on most plays. They don't really like calling holding at all because everybody hates it. This may be like a little hack that he's got going on that could possibly work. He could be very dominant with this throughout his career. The one actual concern I have about Olufashanu is he did not look good against JT Tuimalo. Whenever they were lined up against each other, he didn't give up a sack, but Tuimalo got past him a lot. And part of the reason is his strategy is to kind of get to the end of an offensive line rep instantly. It's to bring the guy in and be infighting right away. There is no keeping him at bay. There's no hand fighting with him. It's all arms. We're inside. We're touching chests. And Tuimalo used that against him, and he knew exactly how to do it. He would go outside, and like I was talking about with Joe Alt, when Tuimalo made his second move, Fashanu didn't really have an answer for that. Fashanu really, he wants you to have your moveset limited because you've been sucked in, you've been brought into his world. And so if you have the ability to go into a second move, to go into a third move, you're going to get in trouble. Now, again, I'm talking about a guy who I believe, if he actually came out of Ohio State, would have been the best defensive end in this draft. No question. I think he's well beyond Dallas Turner, Tuimalo. So that's not necessarily bad. And I was talking about Alt like he's like a legendary prospect, right? Like a top-tier prospect. And I was talking about how him and Tuimalo basically had fucking kaiju wars, like Clash of the Titans in their matchup. However, if you're going to take a left tackle at 9, like you were saying, if these other guys are gone, if Fashanu is left and Alt is gone and the other three wide receivers are gone, you want it to be a guy who can take on the best defensive ends and keep them at bay. And though he didn't give up a sack, Drew Aller ran for his life multiple times because Tuimalo just ran right past him. Now, also to be clear, when Ohio State decided to put Tuimalo on the other side, that was basically fucking over every single time. I have concerns. I think Fashanu is going to be a good tackle. I know he's a good tackle prospect for exactly what you said.
Just to back up what you're saying with numbers, Fashanu gave up 10 hurries this year total. How many of them do you think were in that Ohio State game?
I can remember at least 6 snaps.
It's... 6 is exactly.
Okay.
6 All is right. exactly how many he gave up in that game. Yeah.
Okay.
60% of the pressures he gave up all season were against Tuimalu.
And I don't want people to think that I'm really getting down on him about that, because I want people to know how good JT Tuimalu is.
Well, and I mean everybody has their, some guys just are bad matchups. Even elite players, it just happens. Everybody has that guy that, you know, just has their number. For instance, not offensive line and defensive line, but I always remember that, you know, Darrell Revis was like the greatest corner of all time, maybe, but Stevie Johnson of the Bills just freaking ate his lunch every time. That was the one guy that he couldn't, you know, just like Charles Tillman could shut down Megatron and Randy Moss, like it was nobody's business, but Steve Smith embarrassed him every time. So, you know, everybody has that one guy that's maybe not, and Tuimalu definitely was, you know, he never quite beat him for a sack, but yeah, he was up in Olu's business all day. That was definitely his worst game of his career probably, and it was a bad matchup for him, no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, and again, the thing is, I think that's just what happens when you go up against Tuimalo, you're going to have probably the worst day of your career. It's a concern for me at 9. Where we differ is I would not replace Braxton Jones with Fashanu, not at 9. You know, if the Bears are forced to trade down and somehow he's sitting there at 17 or something or 18 and people were really down on him, then maybe you do consider it, but not at 9. I think that's just the part where we differ, but we agree on the ranking, right? So far, we're basically together. Overall, it would be Alt, Latham, and then Fashanu, but... For the Bears, I think for me it's Alt, and then I wouldn't even consider the other two guys, not at the spot where they're at in the draft. Now things get spicy, though, from what I understand. We are going to disagree on the next spot.
Okay, so, yeah, so like I said, Alt, I would agree with you. If you're stuck at 9 and you can't, so for me it would be as simple as, if the three wide receivers are gone but Alt is there, you take Alt, you don't think about it. If the three wide receivers are there and it's Fashanu, I would start asking around for a trade, but if you don't get something good, like at least like a current year second, I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't move down then, because I do think, like I said, I do think Fashanu can be a true blue left tackle. I really do. So I would pick him, but those are the last two. Oh, damn. The dogs are. Those are the last two offensive linemen that I would pick and stick at 9. Now, if we're trading down and we're considering some other guys, is there going to be some controversy here? Because you were the one that you said you just don't see it at all with Fuaga, right?
That is correct. I am a Talese Fuaga hater.
So straight up hater. Why don't you walk me through that? What don't you like? Because he's getting a lot of attention. Honestly, on the PFF big board, they actually have it. Their offensive line rankings are Alt and then Fuaga. And then the next guy that we haven't talked to either, then Fatanu, then they have Fashanu, and then they have Latham, our boy, all the way down. I can't count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They have Latham as OT5. We have him as OT2. So, like, what does that... You walk me through why you don't like Fuaga, PFF's OT2 in this draft.
Yeah, so... I heard all the hype. I saw all the hype. And I was like, all right, I got to watch this guy because people were talking about him maybe for the Bears, which blew my mind. First of all, I would say he's not a tackle prospect. Just straight up. I have seen a lot of people who still believe that he could be left or right tackle in the NFL who think that like maybe like Atlanta would take him and make him a tackle. I'm not sure I could possibly disagree with that more strongly. The first issue I have with him is he's very immobile. If he gets ahead of steam under him in the run blocking game, he could be a fantastic blocker. Inside, outside, I don't think it really matters. If he gets a full head of steam, he can take the entire defense with him. However, working backwards, making a pocket as a pass protector, I was completely unimpressed with him. I couldn't find a game where he was really dominant in this facet. And he's one of the things we haven't talked about yet is recovery, I think, with offensive linemen. If you are losing a snap, if you start to lose a snap, if a defender starts to get past you, do you have the ability to get back into it? Or is the snap over for you? Is the quarterback done for? A guy like Alt has it. I think Fashanu somewhat struggles with it, which is kind of what I was articulating with Tui Malo. It's just that he rarely ever struggles with it. I do not think Fuaga has the ability to recover at all. And it's because he's not good going backwards, I guess is the way that you would usually say it. If you're assessing offensive lineman prospects, he's not good going backwards. He's way better going forwards. And that's not the kind of guy you want at tackle in the NFL. That's not something I want to try to teach a dude. He is huge and he is ridiculously strong, so I understand the upside there, but I don't like him going backwards. I think his hands are inconsistent, his feet are inconsistent, and it's just, man, for the range that he is being talked about it going, I think he is far more of a project than people think he is. And that's a lot more in that Darius Guyton range where you're like taking a chance on a dude. Now, as a guard, I mean, I could see the similarities to a Tevin Jenkins kind of guy, right? Because it's kind of the same thing. He's nasty. He's got a mean personality, very good going forward, very strong run blocker. As a pass blocker, a lot of the issues he's got with immobility, they're kind of resolved by moving him inside, right? Because you're going up against defensive tackles. You're protected by guys to either side of you. It's a lot easier to be more of a wall in that way. There's not as much on your feet as there is as a tackle. So I do think there's a chance that he could be a good guard in the NFL. My issue with that is I think there's another guy who is better at being a tackle who should move to guard in this draft, who I would put him below. So I would simply, I think at that point, I would simply rank him lower because I think you're drafting him to be a guard. I think if you're going into this and you're drafting Fuaga to be your next starting tackle, you're making a mistake. What do you think? What did you see with Fuaga? I know this guy is getting a lot of hype, man. I'm surprised from what I saw that he is getting hype.
He's extremely powerful. He's very athletic. Fuaga is one of those things where if they didn't have Darnell Wright, I would be more open to it because I think if he sticks at he might stick at tackle. I think if he sticks at tackle, he's probably sticking at right tackle. I think his best place, I think he can be a very, very, I mean, to me, he's kind of similar to I think he's better, but I think he's similar to what I thought of Tevin Jenkins coming out. And I just thought, like, yeah, I could see him sticking at tackle. I think it's more at right tackle than left tackle. And I just, but I think the potential to be a very good guard is absolutely there. And then for me, that a guy that I think is ultimately a guard is just too rich at nine. But I would disagree with you in that I like him better than Fatanu. I think he is on my Bears big board. I guess he would be number three. On my neutral big board, he'd be number four because, you know, got Latham in there. I just think, yeah, you mentioned the not getting back. He's got short strides. He doesn't, like, when it's drop back path, you just don't see him, like, quickly get back and set the pocket. He's got good feet. They're quick. But you just don't see him, like, really drop back. He doesn't get the depth very quickly. And I think that's a problem for a guy who wants to be a left tackle in the NFL. I think that's why if he sticks at tackle, it's going to be right. Even though I just went on the difference. In importance, I don't think there's a lot of difference in overall importance between left tackle and right tackle. And I hate when people continue to pretend there is. In terms of some technique, I do think there's a little bit of a difference there. And so I think, yeah, if he sticks at tackle, it's going to be right tackle. But I think his best position ultimately is guard. And then at that point, that's not something I'm interested in at nine. But I'm a little higher on him than you, I think, because I do think he's a good player.
Yeah, I just I do not necessarily – I just don't think where he is being projected right now is correct, right? I think Fashanu has fallen into this range where I agree with where people are generally projecting him, somewhere in that like 13 to 16 range. I think that's a good place to take a shot at him. I just, the hype around Fuaga, seeing him go, like I said, I've seen a couple mocks that are like, why not eight? Why not at eight? Why not at 10? And I think that's just too high. I think he's more in that Darius Guyton range, a guy we'll talk about in a little bit. But I did, if we want to transition, I mentioned another tackle who's definitely going to be a guard who I like more than Fuaga. Should we talk about Troy Fatanu?
Yeah, so you think you definitely think he's a guard, huh?
Not a tackle to me. No. I think he has the mentality to be a tackle. I think he has that position down. I think he's very good at it. I do not think he is big enough to do that in the NFL. I think it's a pure size thing on him.
Yeah, I'm baiting you a little bit. Yeah, I agree. He's not a tackle, in my opinion. He's a guard.
He's not big. I saw guys say David Bakhtiari, and I think that is such an exception in the NFL. Yeah, I do not do that.
Well, and he's just not. He's Bach. Well, I guess I don't know. Who knows what the hell I thought of David Bakhtiari coming out of college? I can't go back that far in my brain. But Bach is just such a technician, and he's so fluid, and he's so. Whereas Troy, I feel like, is more. He's aggression, and he is like attitude, but I don't see that like fluidity and that like he's not such a solid technician the way. Because if you're going to be small, you have to be a technician. And I don't see that with him, which is why I think his better fit is inside. I have him quite a bit below Fuaga, in my opinion. Yeah, it's still OL5, OT5 for me, I guess, if you will. But, like, I still have him quite a bit below Fuaga for me on either board, Bears or otherwise. Fatato would definitely be a guy that I would not have any interest in taking unless you get, like, a trade down into the 20s somehow. And then I can take him, and then I like him as a potential guard. Because, I mean, you and I are both, we love Tevin Jenkins. We don't trust him any farther than we can throw him. Don't know anything of Nate Davis. And those guards out there are getting expensive. So it's not, I don't want to say that I can't see the logic in taking a guy that you ultimately see as a guard in round one in this draft. But I still think that's bad value at nine. So for me, if you're talking Fuaga, Fatanu, really anybody other than Fashanu or Alt, you got to trade way down to do it. I'm not okay with doing that at nine. So that's the big names there. Only two guys, like I said, that I'm okay with in any scenario at nine. And even then, it's got to be, I'm not okay with passing on either, or I'm not okay with passing on any of the wide receivers for any of them. I'm a little surprised you are okay passing on Odunza for.
I just love Joe Alt. I just love that dude.
Before you guys yell at me on Twitter for that, I want to make it clear. I run the Twitter account. Travis does not. So don't yell at me for that take. That was his take. I'm with you.
Send an email. Send an email to startkyleorton at gmail.com. I'm the one who manages the mailbox, so you can yell at me through
Travis
there.
Tell Travis he's a dumbass for the Odell's take.
That's right.
All right, what about your second tier guys? I assume we're moving clearly now into the second tier of offensive line. Because I will agree, those five guys should be, in my opinion, Alt should be a top five pick in this draft. I would say Fashanu. To me, I'm surprised by how much Fashanu seems to have slid down boards when he would have been like a for sure, in my opinion, top 10 pick last year.
I agree.
He's still only 20. That's another thing. I think it's important to note here that despite him staying in an extra year, Fashanu is only 2 months older than Joe Alt still. And Fuaga why isn't his age on there? Talis. How old is this kid?
37 years old.
He's 21, so that's good for Fuaga there. But that's another thing I don't like about Fatanu is he's already 23 and a half already, basically. That's pretty old for a first round prospect. But Olu is still only 21. Latham is still only 21. Mims 21. Graham Barton, some of the guys we were talking about 21. So that's another thing that's going to knock Fatanu down a little bit for me is that he's an older prospect. Washington just loves them older prospects. They've got Fatanu and Penix. You know, that was an AARP NCAA team. So
they did. They took advantage of those extra years. But yeah, so I would have Fatanu at the very end of my top tier prospect list. And yeah, he would basically be, if the Bears end up trading down to like 20, 21, 19 with the Rams, something like that, that's an acceptable range for me, because then you probably picked up a second round pick. You're probably going to take your wide receiver there or something. The top of my tier two would be Fuaga, because I do think he's more of a bet than people are suspecting. But yeah, I mean, who do you want to talk about first in this second tier? We've got, like you said, Mims. We've got Darius Guyton, I think, in that tier. And then, yeah, we can talk about Barton and Powers Johnson, who are kind of, those are your center prospects, basically. I do think, if we want to just say one thing about Graham Barton, it's very funny to me that you could play tackle your whole career, and then you go into the draft, and everybody's like, that's a motherfucking center. Not even guard. You don't even go to guard. You're like, that is a center. Sorry, dude.
Barton. I like him a lot too. Great athlete, good pass.
He is
definitely a dude. Because last year, it's so funny. Last year we spent this whole episode, basically the offensive lineman episode, talking about how we didn't want to do the Skoronski thing because he was a guard or he was more flexible. Blah, blah. This is a year where if they wanted to trade down and do it, I kind of understand doing a Skoronski like pick, which in this case would be a guy like Barton. I sort of understand just being like, look, we just want to take talented offensive lineman X and we'll figure out where his best fit is along the way. But we want to just do the Philadelphia Eagles thing where you just have wave on wave of offensive linemen and you always have an answer if somebody goes down. So that's, yeah, I mean, if you trade down a little bit, I do like Barton as another guy who could step in and replace Davis or Jenkins a year from now when you're probably making a decision on which of those guys to keep, if you're even keeping one of them. Or he can play some center. You know, there's a lot of options there. I do like Barton a lot. I'm a little lower on Guyton, I think.
You and I are in complete agreement then.
He is.
I don't like that dude.
He's very raw.
Very freaking raw.
And I wasn't impressed by his pass blocking at all. I just like that to me, and I don't think he'll fall that far, but like that to me is a round two guy at best.
Oh, so. he just looks so lost so often. Yeah. He doesn't know where to go, and he's just I understand, like, the appeal of that guy is the one thing. He's huge. Huge. Huge dude. But, like, just completely unimpressive. Yeah, to me, that is a flyer you take on a dude mid to the end of round two. That's not a guy who should be going in the first round, which is, I've seen him go in every single mock draft I've seen somewhere at the end of the first round. So yeah, how about Mims? Mimsy is he's the question mark of this draft, right? He gets hurt. He's a guy who gets injured, and then you don't get to see that much of him.
Yeah, he is a risk, certainly. There's not a lot of snaps there, but he's only 21. He's big. I mean, I don't think he's a fit for the Bears anyways. I think he's a little too big for the kind of scheme they like to run. And I do worry, you know, because of those really big tackles. Like, I don't think it's a coincidence that they keep getting, right? Who was the guy the Jets drafted a couple years ago? Oh God, hold on.
So yeah, while you're looking that up, Mims to me reminds me.
Mekhi Becton.
All right,
Those big guys. I do think there's an upper limit. You see so few guys that just like consistently stay healthy, at that weight. So I think there's some. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with that. He's a big dude. He's pre-injured. He comes pre-injured. That's the issue. You do not really want that with an offensive tackle ever. That, to me, that pushes him down in the second round overall. And again, I'm seeing Mims go in the first round regardless. I understand why. I've seen a lot of people compare his profile to Broderick Jones from last year. I think that's a mistake. Broderick Jones is a guy who had a ton of athleticism that sometimes got beyond his control. He sometimes just got too into a play. He was like, oh, I'm going to winning this snap and I'm no longer pass blocking. Now I'm just fucking run blocking this guy. And he just kind of get out of control. I think with Mims, I think they're conflating what Broderick Jones did with a guy who's just kind of raw. I do think the talent is there with Mims. Not quite the same kind of talent that you got with Broderick Jones last year, but yeah, I really hate the idea of taking a guy who gets injured this much. A guy who, you know, comes with, and like you said, they're injuries which have an obvious correlation. I know why you're getting hurt. And historically, a guy at your size is going to keep getting hurt. I don't like that. I don't like making that pick. Yeah, I think Mims would be kind of off my board just for that reason. Because I'd expect him to keep getting hurt in the NFL, quite frankly.
Yeah, I think that seems fair. I don't know. Is that a good play? I think we covered everybody that we kind of need to cover.
I guess I don't think there's anybody else we need to cover. I don't think taking anybody later in the draft makes sense.
Is there? Well, I mean, just in case there is, like, who is a guy that you think is like a polls guy later in the draft that you might just, let's just call a shot. Say, you know, if Poles trades down, gets a bunch of lotto tickets, takes a guy in round 4 or 5, I think it might be X. Who do you think that might be?
Oh, my God. Round 4 or 5. It wouldn't be a tackle. It would be a guard. And I think so. The one guy who I like at guard in this draft is Cooper Beebe. I expect him to be off the board well before we would get anywhere in the fourth round. There was a dude I had outlined. It is, hold up. It would be Zach Zinter. That was the guy, the Michigan guard, one of them, not the other one. They're both in this draft and they're both not bad. I like Zach Zinter. I have seen him falling in a couple of drafts, and I think he would be a solid addition to this line. That would be the only guard I would take who would fall around that area in the draft, I think.
Okay, I'm just completely calling my shot here.
Okay, all right.
If they take...
Please do!
a late round offensive lineman. I'm going to suggest Jalen Sundell, the center from North Dakota State, as a potential option. That RAS score was 9.33, baby. He's got some guard center versatility. I'm just saying.
What was the broad jump?
That's a good question. I didn't see that. But yeah, no, he feels like a poles guy. So that's my just calling my shot there, just so that if it happens, I can look like a genius. And if it doesn't, I'd be like, well, no one can predict the draft. So yeah, that's our offensive line.
I'm going to have, I'll give you a tease. I have a serious shot to call next week when we talk about defensive linemen. I have a very specific dude I think that Poles is going to take.
He's going to call a
shot. And I have been. I have been talking to Kyle about this for weeks, like, oh, God, this is a Poles guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, next week is defensive line.
Yeah, defensive line, I think, is the – yeah, so the I think the three main groups that we expect to be in play at nine or even in a trade down are offensive line, wide receiver, defensive line. So next week we'll wrap up those three groups. I think I'm ready for – I think I'm ready for a take myself that you maybe don't agree with. My maybe my equivalent of your whole, I don't know, I won't take anybody over Roma Dunza, so maybe not that controversial, but
okay, all right,
we'll see.
All right. Anyways,
so yeah, thanks for tuning in, folks. We will see you next week.
A little bit of house cleaning. We are now on YouTube, folks. It's been the most requested feature. The most requested shit in the history of this podcast probably is, hey, could you just put this on YouTube, you idiots? We're up there. Every episode of the podcast has been uploaded. This one will be new. So yeah, this is the first new episode to go up on YouTube. We're on YouTube Music, and I am getting the kinks worked out so that hopefully, maybe, we can live stream on YouTube for the draft. Don't hold me to that. But yeah, if you guys listen to this on Spotify and this whole time, you've been thinking, please put this on YouTube. We're there now. Go out there. So I can say it, Kyle. I can finally say it. We're YouTubers now. Smash that like and subscribe button.
God.
What have and, done? And thanks. Yeah, it would really help us out. Guys, really help us out. All right. Yeah. Send us an email at startkyleorton at gmail.com or harass Kyle for my bad
email
takes
me
at startkyleorton.
Email me if you want a pizza roll. Post a
set. We will send you a pizza roll.
Later, folks.
Way out on that bumpers road. Now you know I'm leaving Chicago. And people I sure do hate to go. Now you're leaving.